Today is Thursday, February 13th, and this is the World Socialist Website. A tragedy caused by capitalism. Two Detroit children freeze to death in homeless family's vehicle. By Jerry White. In a shocking tragedy in Detroit, two small children on Monday froze to death inside a van at a casino parking lot, where the homeless family was sheltering from the cold. The event has evoked an outpouring of sympathy for the victims and indignation over the brutal realities of American capitalism. Tatiana Williams, a 29-year-old unemployed medical assistant, her mother, and their five children have reportedly been homeless for 3 months. They regularly parked the van in various casino garages because it was safer than the streets and afforded them access to casino bathrooms. On Monday at 1 in the morning, police say Williams parked the van on the 9th floor of the Hollywood Casino Hotel parking structure in downtown Detroit. While they slept, the vehicle ran out of gas or malfunctioned, leaving the seven occupants without heat as outside temperatures were as low as 12 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 11 degrees Celsius. When the young mother tried to wake her children up for school, she found her oldest child unresponsive. A friend who had come to assist Williams with her disabled car rushed the mother and her child to the hospital. En route, they learned that Williams' youngest child had stopped breathing. The two children, Darnell, 9, and Amila, 2, were pronounced dead from apparent hypothermia. On Tuesday, Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan called a press conference to largely deflect any responsibility from his administration. The Democratic mayor insisted the city provided ample resources for the homeless, but claimed poor residents did not know how to access them. Williams, the mayor admitted, had reached out to the city's homeless response team at least 3 times, including as late as November 2024. Duggan said, quote, for whatever reason, it was not deemed an emergency. He added accusingly, quote, the family never called back for service, unquote. At the press conference, the police chief told reporters the results of his investigation would be turned over to the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. In cases like these, he said, the prosecutor might issue charges, quote, not necessarily criminal, but sometimes negligence. In interviews with local news on Tuesday, the distraught but resolute mother rejected efforts to paint her as an irresponsible parent, quote, I gave my kids everything they needed. The only thing they didn't have was a house, unquote. City authorities have a sordid history of scapegoating victims for tragedies caused by chronic poverty and social indifference. They might still do so, but large numbers of workers identify with the mother because they know they are one or two paychecks from a similar catastrophe. By Wednesday, the story fell off the front pages of the Detroit media, and few, if any, national outlets even reported it. A major factor for this is that the homeless crisis cuts across the myth about Detroit's supposed turnaround since the city's bankruptcy restructuring in 2013 and 2014. Duggan and other city leaders have claimed that new development projects in the downtown area and selective neighborhoods would raise property values and living standards for the city's residents. The problem is, Detroit remains one of the poorest large cities in America, with a median household income of under $28,000 and an official poverty rate of 38%. The vast majority of the working-class population are working in low-wage jobs or unemployed, like Tatiana Williams, and have largely been priced out of the housing market. Between 2020 and 2024, there has been a 72% increase in housing values. Homes in the Detroit metropolitan area are now 40% overvalued compared to their long-term pricing trends, according to data on the top 100 U.S. housing markets by Florida Atlantic University. This has been a boondoggle for investor and real estate developer Dan Gilbert, net worth of over $27 billion, the Illich family, the owners of Little Caesars Pizza, and Detroit's professional baseball and hockey franchises, and other investors. Gilbert's 49-story skyscraper on the site of the demolished old Hudson's department store includes the residence at the Detroit Edition, where pricing will range from $550,000 to $3 million and beyond. Rents in the new upscale housing units range from $1,600 to nearly $4,800 a month. Any examination of the Motor City is impossible outside of discussing the collapse of the U.S. auto industry and the official labor movement. As the result of the militant struggle of auto workers in the first half of the last century, Detroit residents had the highest per capita income in 1960. But the ruling class never reconciled itself to this, and over the next decades waged a relentless war to destroy jobs and living standards. The United Auto Workers bureaucracy colluded in this historic reversal in the social position of the working class, which was overseen by the Democratic Party and the corrupt black political establishment that has dominated the city for decades. The homeless crisis goes far beyond Detroit. According to the latest report from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, over 771,000 individuals experienced homelessness in the United States in 2024, up 18% from the previous year. This included nearly 150,000 children under 18, the age group which experienced the largest increase of 33% between 2023 and 2024. Because of its prevalence, officials have coined the term vehicular homelessness, with HUD estimating as many as 113,000 people living in their cars, vans, and RVs on any given night. In rural areas of Michigan and other states, social workers say homelessness is drastically underestimated because those living in the woods and rental storage facilities are not counted. This is American capitalism in the 21st century. Billionaires like Musk, Bezos, and Gilbert on one side, and tens of millions of people living on the edge of disaster on the other. Homelessness shot up under Biden. In California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom bulldozed homeless encampments. Vice President J.D. Vance scapegoats immigrants for high housing costs, while Trump and Musk prepare to axe Medicaid, housing, education, and other essential programs that will result in the murder of many more victims. In his pleas for social reform in the 1890s, Jacob Riis photographed New York City's army of homeless boys who made their nest on steam pipes and old boilers to keep warm. Today, the oligarchy is hell-bent on destroying whatever that is left of any reforms to boost their unfathomable fortunes in their imperialist wars. The working class in the United States and around the world are being reminded why the Russian Revolution and the great upheavals of the past occurred in the first place. If future tragedies are to be prevented, workers in the factories, hospitals, schools, and other workplaces must build a powerful rank-and-file movement, free from the trade union bureaucracies and the two capitalist parties, to mobilize their collective strength through strikes and mass protests. Workers must demand wages that stay ahead of the high cost of living, affordable housing and utilities, an end to crushing credit card, auto, student loan, and other debts, and free health care. This must be financed through the expropriation of the ill-gotten wealth of the oligarchs, the transformation of the auto industry, and the giant real estate and financial firms into public utilities. But such life-saving measures can only be implemented through a political struggle, uniting workers of all races and ethnic backgrounds to defeat Trump's plans to establish a presidential dictatorship and replace the rule of the oligarchy with the democratic rule of the working class and socialism. Trump quashes Adams prosecution to speed attacks on immigrants, by Patrick Martin. In an extraordinary effort to use the criminal justice system to serve his political ends, President Donald Trump has ordered a halt to the prosecution of New York Mayor Eric Adams on bribery charges, in return for Adams agreeing to fully cooperate with the Trump administration's onslaught on migrants and refugees. Adams was indicted last September on charges of taking bribes, including both luxury travel and illegal foreign campaign contributions, in return for official acts like pushing through the approval of a new Turkish consulate in Manhattan despite building inspectors warning the structure was unsafe. In January, the federal prosecutor for the Southern District of New York said that he had found, quote, additional criminal conduct, unquote, by the mayor. The Democratic mayor proclaimed loudly last year that Democratic President Joe Biden and his Department of Justice had filed charges because of Adams' public opposition to the administration's immigration policy. Adams had claimed that the influx of immigrants shipped to New York City by Texas Governor Greg Abbott would destroy the city. Although New York has throughout its history been the point of entry for vastly larger numbers of immigrants. While those claims were preposterous and self-serving, there is a direct connection between the halt in the prosecution of Adams and his agreement to join in and fully cooperate with the Trump administration's persecution of immigrants. This was spelled out in a remarkably blunt memo from Acting Deputy Attorney General Emil Bove, instructing the Manhattan prosecutors to put the case on hold until after the mayoral election in November. Bove wrote that the Department of Justice, or DOJ, was, quote, particularly concerned about the impact of the prosecution on Mayor Eric Adams' ability to support critical, ongoing federal efforts to protect the American people from the disastrous effects of unlawful mass migration and resettlement, unquote. In an effort to disavow an explicit quid pro quo, he said the DOJ was, quote, not offering to exchange dismissal of a criminal case for Adams' assistance on immigration enforcement, unquote. This is precisely what is taking place, although the Trump administration is driving a somewhat harder bargain, putting the prosecution of Adams on the shelf, but reserving the right to proceed against him if he fails to meet its demands, which include the use of New York Police Department personnel on immigration raids and ordering city employees to provide full cooperation with ICE and other federal agencies. Despite the cities having previously passed legislation, at least formally, prohibiting collaboration with ICE and immigrant roundups, Adams, supported by Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul, allowed the NYPD to coordinate with the Department of Homeland Security and carrying out widespread raids on immigrants in Manhattan, Queens, and the Bronx 2 weeks ago. Last Thursday, a memo of Adams was leaked to the media that gave instructions to city agencies to allow ICE to enter city premises, including homeless shelters, schools, and hospitals, sparking widespread outrage among city workers and immigration advocates. Adams told the local ABC television station Sunday, quote, I cannot have any city employee that will get in the way of ICE carrying out their job as a federal authority. That would be irresponsible for me, unquote. This coming Tuesday, Adams is to meet with the White House border czar Tom Homan to discuss joint efforts against alleged gang members. Honan told a radio interviewer, quote, either he comes to the table or we go around him, but he promised he's all in on arresting public safety threats that are here illegally, unquote. Honan went on to say that newly sworn in Attorney General Pam Bondi, quote, is already taking sanctuary cities to court. She's pulling federal funding from them, unquote. Adams faces a difficult re-election bid, polling at little more than 20% among prospective voters in the Democratic primary set for June 24, 2025. Several challengers or potential challengers have amassed substantial resources or can tap them easily, including former Governor Andrew Cuomo, City Controller Brad Lander, and Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani, backed by the Democratic Socialists of America. The mayor could well forego the Democratic primary if he looks like a sure loser and run for re-election as an independent or even as a Republican, provided he obtains Trump's backing for the race. The Justice Department intervention is directly linked to these political considerations. Trump and congressional Republicans have made a deafening hue and cry over weaponization of the Justice Department, as though the cases brought against Trump, particularly over the attack on Capitol Hill he instigated on January 6, 2021, were an abuse of power by the Biden administration. The truth is that the Biden White House delayed the prosecution of Trump over January 6 as long as possible, while publicly declaring the desire to sustain a strong Republican Party. In the case of Adams, the use of the Department of Justice as a tool for interference with an election is absolutely brazen. And Trump has combined this with further gestures aimed at winning over a section of the Democratic Party, particularly targeting those with the most right-wing political record. On Monday, Trump granted a full pardon to former Congressman and Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who was convicted of selling appointments and contracts for cash, including the Senate seat vacated by Barack Obama when he was elected president in 2008. Trump commuted Blagojevich's jail sentence during his first term in office, while the pardon now expunges the conviction. Press reports indicated that an Adams-type deal might be on offer to Representative Henry Cuellar, a right-wing Democrat from South Texas who faces bribery charges brought by the Biden Justice Department. Former Democratic Senator Rob Menendez of New Jersey, convicted last year in a corruption scheme in which he filled his living room with gold bars and wads of cash from the government of Egypt, hailed the quashing of the Adams prosecution and expressed the hope that Trump would look at his case as well. On a broader scale, Trump seeks to immunize not just corrupt capitalist politicians, but corrupt corporate bosses and billionaires. He issued an executive order Monday suspending for 180 days all prosecutions under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, enacted to bar U.S. corporations from paying bribes to foreign government officials. Trump ordered Attorney General Bondi to pause the prosecutions and review the guidelines for bringing such charges, because the FCPA had been, quote, stretched beyond proper bounds and abused in a manner that harms the interests of the United States, unquote, because U.S. corporations were barred from paying bribes while their foreign competitors were not. Suspending the law would, quote, mean a lot more business for America, unquote. A White House fact sheet added that over-enforcement of the FCPA infringed on the president's authority and foreign policy and stopped U.S. companies from, quote, engaging in practices common among international competitors, creating an uneven playing field, unquote. This action could have a direct impact on Trump's own business interests, since the Trump Organization has numerous overseas operations where it might be to its advantage to pay bribes to foreign government officials to gain access to lucrative sites for hotels, casinos, and resorts. With contract vote looming on the East Coast, Trump's tariffs would place a heavy burden on dock workers, by Eric Schreiber. More than 40,000 workers in the International Longshoremen's Association, or ILA, from the East and Gulf Coasts are set to vote on February 25th on a new contract. The deal was announced at the 11th hour on January 8th to block a strike which would have shut down much of U.S. shipping. A major feature of the deal is that it was reportedly brokered through heavy intervention from then-President-elect Donald Trump. Afterwards, ILA President Harold Daggett hailed the fascist Trump as, quote, one of the best friends of working men and women in the United States, unquote. Prior to the strike deadline, Trump had issued nationalist statements claiming that, quote unquote, foreign companies were to blame for job losses on the ports due to automation, and claimed that his America First program of high tariffs and trade war would save jobs in the United States. This past Friday, Trump announced that he would introduce tariffs on goods from several countries. This was followed up this week by the announcement of new tariffs on steel and aluminum products. He is preparing a trade war against the rivals and even the nominal allies of U.S. imperialism. Despite his recent pause of tariffs on Canadian and Mexican goods, Trump will not hesitate to impose them to achieve the desired economic and political aims. Trump also threatened to impose tariffs on Japan. Not only the ILA, but significant sections of the union bureaucracy have embraced Trump's ultranationalism, in particular the claim that protectionist measures will save American jobs. Teamsters General President Sean O'Brien is another top Trump supporter, and United Auto Workers President Sean Fain has endorsed Trump's tariff measures while hypocritically claiming to oppose his attacks on immigrants. This claim is a lie. These trade war policies are aimed not at protecting American jobs from foreign competition, but to reinforce the domination of U.S. capitalism over the world economy. The domestic corollary to this policy is massive attacks on the working class, beginning with immigrants and expanding to workers in every industry. By promoting Trump, Daggett, O'Brien, and others are trying to break the strength of the working class, whose power lies in the global unity of its interest. In opposition to this, dock workers must form independent rank-and-file committees to take power out of the hands of the bureaucracy, whether they support Trump or his feckless opponents in the Democratic Party. Rejecting the program of America First, workers must take up the slogan, "Workers of the World Unite." Moreover, Trump's policies are shot through with contradictions. In imposing tariffs on an increasingly integrated world economy, threatens to produce massive economic shocks, both at home and abroad. The cost of this trade war will be borne by the working class, especially by dock workers. Because of their crucial position in the global economy, dock workers would be among the first to feel the effects of Trump's tariffs and of other countries' retaliatory tariffs. The ocean ports handle about 77% of U.S. overseas cargo, representing a trade value of $4.6 trillion, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation's 2023 report to Congress. The value of goods moved per month increased from more than $90 billion in 2019 to almost $200 billion in the summer of 2022. Dock workers on the East and Gulf Coasts handle the lion's share of these shipments. Ports on the Gulf Coast handle approximately 51% of shipments by volume, according to the Department of Transportation. The Atlantic coast handles about 19%, and the Pacific coast about 12%. U.S. ports support the employment of more than 31 million people, according to the American Association of Ports Authorities. Tariffs are paid by companies that import goods across the border. They increase these companies' costs, and the companies often raise their prices to recoup these costs. Ultimately, the costs of tariffs are passed on to consumers. Trump's proposed tariffs could affect oil and lumber from Canada, produce, clothing, liquor, and auto parts from Mexico, and plastics, textiles, and computer chips from China, among other products. Sections of the financial and corporate oligarchy are nervous about the potential effects of Trump's tariffs. Last week, S&P Global Ratings estimated that these effects would be overwhelmingly negative. The agency's economic team found that the tariffs could slow growth in the U.S. gross domestic product, increase unemployment, and increase inflation. Their analysis was based on the 25% tariffs on Canadian and Mexican goods, which have been paused, and the additional 10% tariff on Chinese goods. The Pro-Corporate Tax Foundation predicted that the tariffs could disrupt supply chains, increase costs for businesses, drive up consumer prices, and eliminate hundreds of thousands of jobs. The tariffs would especially damage the automotive, energy, and food industries. The U.S. imports nearly half of its auto parts from Canada and Mexico, and tariffs on those countries could slow or halt auto production and raise prices. Canada and Mexico also supply more than 70% of U.S. crude oil imports, and tariffs on those countries could raise gas prices by as much as 50 cents per gallon in the Midwest, according to the Tax Foundation. Trump's tariffs would increase inflation, which was at a 2.9% annual rate in December, by 0.4 of a percentage point this year, said Gregory Dako, the chief economist at the tax and consulting firm EY. The U.S. economy, which grew by 2.8% in 2024, would decline by 1.5% this year and by 2.1% in 2026, he added. Moreover, Trump's tariffs would reduce the annual purchasing power of the average American household by $1,000 to $1,200, according to the budget lab at Yale University. The above estimates assume that the tariffs include Mexico and Canada, as well as China. Almost half of U.S. imports come from Canada, China, and Mexico, and the new tariffs could reduce overall U.S. imports by 15%, according to Bloomberg Economics. With or without potential tariffs against additional countries, this reduction in trade would directly threaten dock workers with layoffs and job cuts. The International Longshoremen's Association has not issued any warnings about how Trump's tariffs would affect dock workers on the East and Gulf Coasts. On the contrary, the union has lavish praise on the fascist president. While Trump attempts to blame overseas corporations for automation, American-based companies, which also operate all over the globe, are also pursuing automation to reduce their labor cost and increase their profits. Covering up this fact, the ILA is cultivating national chauvinism to prepare the working class for the military conflict that ultimately results from trade war. To a greater extent than ever, the world's national economies have become globally integrated. The remarkable volume and total value of commodities that dock workers handle each day are concrete reflections of this global integration. Under these circumstances, nationalist programs such as the one that Trump and the ILA are advancing are not only hopeless, but also reactionary. The extraordinary integration of the world economy, along with advances in communication and transportation, make it possible to provide a high standard of living to the entire world population. The only obstacle to the elimination of want is the profit system. Dock workers and all workers in every country face the same profit-driven attacks on their pay, benefits, working conditions, and jobs. In a global economy, workers can only defend their standard of living by uniting across national boundaries. The promotion of national chauvinism is an effort by the ruling class to pit various sections of the international working class against each other. Workers must reject this nationalist poison, along with the political parties and trade unions that promote it, in favor of an international struggle against capitalism, which is the cause of economic crisis and war. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.